That's such a pretty song. Okay, so we are making our way through this weird book called God in My Head. Have you become more aware of the God in your head? Because I think we have to acknowledge that we'll never understand all that God is, but each of us has images or ideas about God that make sense to us. And if God is everything, they're all true. It's a good thing, though, that we don't have to agree or see it the same way or find the right way to think about God. But the author of this book, Joshua Grizzetti, wanted to see it the right way. And so did I for a long time. Like him, I grew up Southern Baptist. I decided as a young adult I didn't believe what they taught, but I didn't know there was any other version, any other way to see God or understand humanity. And I'm not criticizing the Southern Baptists. They have far more people than Unity. Obviously, their teachings make sense to millions of people, and they are more traditionally Christian than Unity. A lot of us in Unity came out of fairly rigid churches, not everyone. But I think when we've been taught black and white lessons about God and the Bible, and then decide we don't believe those particular lessons, our next step is not naturally to just trust the mystery. It's to find out what's really true, what really happened, and how it ought to be taught instead. We see this in the Apostle Paul, and we'll talk more about him in a few minutes. But you know, he was the first to write about Jesus. He never met Jesus. He was not a disciple. But he said he had a conversion experience, and about half the New Testament was written by Paul as he planted little churches around the Mediterranean. Paul had been Saul, a Pharisee. Remember, the Pharisees were sticklers for Jewish law. Jesus had no patience with them. They would claim to uphold God's law with diet and tithing and praying and show no compassion or forgiveness, the things that were important to Jesus. So Saul was this hidebound Pharisee who followed the letter of the law and hated Christians until his experience, whatever it was. And after he switched to Jesus, he was renamed Paul, and he had the zeal of a convert. He became Jesus' publicist. And really, without him, we might not have ever known Jesus lived. But Paul had lived by rules, so he started creating rules for Christianity, laws to live by. And many of his letters to the churches were about how they should behave and what the rules should be. My point is, if you think religion is about rules and literalism and finding the right way, you'll keep looking for that. As I discovered other paths and came to Unity, I wanted to know the real truth about everything. I decided what it wasn't, but I wanted to know what it was. Bible stories, Jesus' life, what did really happen? And my first minister, E.J. Niles, would say, "Does it really matter?" Yes, it matters. Because if it's not true, by which I meant factually accurate, then I can't believe it, and it means nothing. Because that's what the Baptists taught me. It has to be literally true, or it's meaningless. So that's about where Joshua Grizzetti was in his head when he met God in his head. He was still on a search for facts. And God was happy to answer his question. We meet God wherever we are, or God meets us. So if you're just joining our story, Joshua had such traumatic experiences at the dentist that he began to drink and take drugs before his dental appointments. And one day when he had done that and they added nitrous oxide to that mix, he had this long hallucination, vision, out-of-body experience, something in which he believes he met God. The God in his head was anthropomorphic. He was a separate male being who looked like Joshua and talked in a resonant voice. And this book, God in My Head, is what God told him. To his credit, Joshua does not claim this is the ultimate revealed truth. It's just what he got from the experience. And he's very upfront about what a troubled soul he was at the time. So today we're in chapter 8, parts 9, 10, and 11. And Joshua goes back into some of his personal story. He had bouts of crippling depression. He experienced anger and guilt, but mostly he just felt weak. And he believed God met him with nothing but silence. So he stopped believing in God. For nearly a decade, he cut himself, little cuts with a knife. He says he found some release in seeing the blood flow. He thought he was totally alone and unique in the world. And when he found out cutting is not uncommon, he stopped doing it. He didn't want to be trendy. He smoked marijuana instead. And he says he thought about killing himself, but a voice inside kept telling him to keep going. This was not the end. And that voice was God, or so God told him in this later encounter. Remember last week, God said he took human form as Jesus to shift his relationship with humanity. Not because we have to be saved through Jesus, but that when Jesus died, the energy of God exploded like a supernova into the universe and became part of every living thing. And I said last week, I believe God has been part of everything all along, but this is Joshua's story to tell. So it was that God particle within Joshua that guided him through his terrible years as a teenager and a young man and kept him alive. And he was surprised to hear this, because he thought God had abandoned him all those years. He was arguing with that verse from Corinthians, written by the Apostle Paul, again, that says, God will not let you be tested beyond your strength. The Baptist Church had always told Joshua, God won't give you more than you can handle. Wrong. A lot of us get more than we can handle. Joshua believed he had. And in this vision, God told him the verse wasn't quite right. It doesn't mean you won't ever feel overwhelmed by events, because that's part of the human experience. And remember, humans wanted to experience it all. It means God will be with us no matter what. Even if we do feel so overwhelmed that we commit suicide, God is there with us. God is with us in all of life and in death. That does not necessarily protect us from bad events or emotional upheaval. But in the great cosmic scheme of things, we are safe and never alone. Have you noticed that everyone who comes back from the other side, near-death experience, some kind of vision, says that? We are safe and never alone. Joshua still had questions. He wanted to know more about the Bible, starting at the beginning. So we talked a lot last week about the early humans and what we know as the Garden of Eden. And so they went back through that, and God said there are really two main points there. One is God did create man in his image, and man did want the knowledge of good and evil, wanted to experience all of life. So humans had to leave the garden. The apple, the serpent, are just part of our story. Every civilization or religion has a story of creation and explanations about why life is the way it is. God told Joshua the earth was never flooded. There was no Noah and the ark. There were many floods. And he said much of what we have in the Bible are exaggerated stories about what really did happen. And others are just stories. Jonah swallowed by a whale. Samson losing his strength when his hair was cut off. They're just stories to make a moral point, but Joshua said God seemed really fond of them. And remember, this was news to Joshua, that not everything in the Bible is literally factual. So after Genesis, he asked about the ancient laws in Leviticus and Deuteronomy, which still cause us trouble. That's where it says, where the Bible says people who are gay should be put to death. It also says children who sass their parents should be put to death. There are 613 commandments, not just 10. And they are rules about what to eat, what to wear, how to farm, how to sacrifice animals on the altar. And God told Joshua, forget about it. He doesn't care about those laws. They were merely to help nomads become a civilization, to create a society. The Bible talks about angels, which are described in all sorts of weird ways. And God said angels are just another way to envision divine energy. It's all that God particle within us. Angels are a way to relate to it, to think about it. Then there's the devil. Joshua was shocked, I say, to learn there is no evil monster trolling the earth, luring souls to the dark side. This is what Unity teaches too. Things do happen that we label evil, but there is no force of evil doing battle with God, just as there's no darkness trying to overtake the light in your house. What we label evil is just another face of God. Yin and yang, good and evil, God contains it all. This is from the book. That said, God also told me that some people needed to see good and evil separated in order to make sense of the world around them. These were people who struggled to accept that life was designed to be complex, diverse, and difficult. For them, God appeared as two separate entities, both God the good and the devil the bad. In this way, those who needed such structure could find it, a religious system with clearly marked labels like Christianity. Other men and women, those who could grasp the vastness and inherent duality of God, traditionally found other faith traditions that suited them better, like Taoism, the Baha'i, and Buddhism. It's not easy to get your mind around the oneness of things, but I don't think you have to step outside Christianity to do it. Once again, Joshua is attributing to all Christians the black and white teachings he learned as a Baptist. But the point is, there is no devil. Also, no heaven or hell, God said. He told Joshua the same thing Jesus told all of us, that we create our own heaven or hell on earth according to our state of mind, our consciousness. Then finally, they got to the book of Revelation. You may know Revelation starts with letters to seven churches that existed at the time. And then it goes into these wild, colorful visions that every generation for 2,000 years has thought were about them and the end of the world that would come in their lifetimes. What God told Joshua is a view of Revelation I've never heard before. I did a Sunday series on Revelation almost exactly 3 years ago. And I said Revelation is about our path to spiritual awakening. It's the path to living as the Christ, living in divine consciousness. But Joshua, as always, is more literal. He says John, the author of Revelation, was warning the churches they were getting too far away from the actual teachings of Jesus. And for that, he blamed the Apostle Paul. That Paul, in fact, was the Antichrist. I've never heard that. But in this version, John thought Paul was rewriting Jesus' teachings to make belief in Jesus a condition for salvation with heaven or hell as a reward, when actually Jesus' true message was unconditional love for all people. Well, I agree Paul's teachings were not always the same as Jesus, and Paul's voice was somehow louder as Christianity developed. There were lots of disputes among early Christians about who Jesus was and what he said and what it all meant. So maybe John did hate Paul. I just think Revelation is about a lot more than that. And if you really want to dive into Revelation, read Ed Townley's book, Kingdom Come. One more thing Joshua wanted to know about, sin. And God said what we've often said, sin is missing the mark. It is not necessarily wickedness or evil, it's just human foibles. And what sin for one person might not be for another. This was anathema to Joshua. This is moral relativism. This disputes that there is absolute right and absolute wrong, and you better not get them confused. That's a very fundamentalist version. But Joshua acknowledges that even the Bible has moral relativism. Thou shalt not kill, except the Bible's full of killing, sanctioned by God as long as you kill the right people. And we still kill when we believe it's the right thing to do. War, death penalty, bombing terrorist cells. I'm not saying it's right or it isn't. I'm saying it's part of the human condition to decide. We have responsibility to live in a complex world. Black and white rules don't serve us. They can't cover every eventuality. So this is also from the book. The line between right and wrong can be precariously thin at times, but the burden of finding it is not in ancient platitudes, but in daily decision-making. This incredible, turbulent, lifelong challenge is very much a part of what it means to be human. To understand what is right for you and what is wrong for you is rudimentary to understanding yourself. When you get it wrong, you sin, betraying yourself and or the people around you. God told me there was no external punishment for such actions per se, but that the repercussions of such sins were their own punishment. Prolonged exposure to sinful behavior results in creating a sort of hell for yourself here on earth, just as perpetual righteousness results in building up the kingdom of heaven all around you. This was the true message God was attempting to convey to me in my hallucination, and the true message Jesus attempted to convey to the world 2,000 years ago. That's what unity says too. You are not punished for your sins, you're punished by them. Joshua does not ever address the creative power of our thoughts, but he does begin to understand that life is about choices. As humans, we live in a world of contrast or duality, and we get to choose what to do and how to be. We have free will, and we want to experience all of it in this life, maybe many lives. So next week we'll talk about what happens after this life and what happened to Joshua after he met God. And if you're following along, start in chapter 8, part 12, and just read to the end of the book. But for now, let's take these thoughts into meditation with Melinda.
A lot of thoughts, a lot of information. And yet it comes down to this. God is within us and we have a choice. So just breathe into that. When I turn within, I like to feel kind of a flame at my heart center. However you find your God within, find that God particle and expand it. Let it glow. Let it flow all the way through your body and all the way through your mind. And each time you breathe in, think, breathe in love. And breathe out judgment. Breathe in love. Let go of the breath as you let go of any judgment of self, of other, of circumstances, of actions. Kind of hard to do. But for this time, in this safe space, in this relaxed position, I invite you to let go enough to entertain this idea. What if you couldn't do it wrong? What if there is no wrong? Each choice brings a different experience. Some are pleasant, some are not. Some we want to repeat, and some we don't want to repeat. But there's no bad. If God is within each of us, then there is only good. There is only God. And that must mean that all of it is God. So think of something in your life that may have happened in the last week or month or so that just felt like not good. And when you feel that tightness of not good, breathe into it. There are only different choices. And other people's different choices affect ours. We are not alone. There are 7 billion God on this planet. And if we can truly look within ourselves and find that we can release that judgment, perhaps we can release that judgment of the other 6.99% billion people. It feels scary. It feels like we're losing a construct that our society has built into us from childhood. But I think that's what spiritual growth is. It is a process of breaking through the truth within, beyond culture, beyond influence. And that truth of what is good and right and true and what we want and what we desire and how we wish to make our world, how we wish to live in heaven rather than in hell, is within each of us. So let's just sit in that space in the silence for just a moment. And when we're ready to come back to the room, having released some of that judgment of self, I think we'll find it's true that we are less likely to judge others as well. For we are one. We are one. We are one with God and each other. There is only one.